The reading is from the first letter of St. Paul to the Thessalonians. Concerning times and seasons, you have no need, my brothers and sisters, for anything to be written to you. For you yourselves know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night, when people are saying, peace and security, then sudden disaster comes upon them, like the labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you, brothers and sisters, are not in darkness, for that day to overtake you like a thief. For all of you are children of the light and children of the day. We are not of the night or of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as the rest do, but let us stay alert. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It was in the dark, the very early morning of this date, November 16th, 25 years ago, in San Salvador, El Salvador, that a planning was taking place. A planning of the Atlacat Battalion near the Jesuit University. It was a battalion created a few years earlier at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. The military men were planning the assassination of the president, Father Ignacio Ellacuría. As it happened, there were 6 Jesuit priests who were killed that night also, plus a woman who worked at the university and her 15-year-old daughter, Selena. A number of the officers and the soldiers at that planning meeting had trained at the School of the Americas. And of the 9 that eventually came to trial, 6 of them were graduates of the School of the Americas. At the time, I was in another part of the city, El Salvador, when the assassination took place. For me, it was also early in the morning, and I saw a crowd of people gathered at the corner. When I approached them, a young man dressed in black spun around toward me and pointed his M16 rifle at me. "Who are you? What are you doing here? Put your hands in the air." I obeyed him and was responding frantically that I was a Catholic priest and I was on my way to the church for Mass, that I lived there, right up the street. And then another older man from the crowd shouted out, "He's okay. Stop pointing your rifle at him. He's a friend. He's a priest. And he lives here with us." So the young man lowered his rifle and said to me, "Well, if you're a friend of the people, you can stay and listen to what I have to say. I'm telling them who we are and why we're here." He gestured to 15 or 20 other young men and women dressed in black. "We've been fighting the civil war in the countryside and the mountains," he said, "for years, and it doesn't seem to make any difference to the people here in the city. The military is well supplied with guns and ammunition by the government of the United States. So we have decided to bring the war to the city and have taken over 5 different areas, and yours is one of them. As you can see, though we carry weapons, we've taken over your neighborhood peacefully. Not a shot has been fired. But we also know," he said, "that in a little while, hundreds, perhaps thousands of military troops will be here. They'll come with tanks and helicopters and bombers and will fire wherever they think we might be. So so for you to be safe, go back to your houses and lock the doors and stay close to the floor because there's going to be lots of shooting taking place. You just stay inside your homes. And that's exactly what happened. For the next days, we stayed inside, sometimes under a table, under a bed, because of the fierce fighting taking place outside. But at night, the government soldiers would leave and go back to their barracks. So the people would come out of their houses. Some would visit with the revolutionaries. Stores would open. People would get food and supplies, and they'd bring casualties to our clinic. And the dead, too. A couple of us slept on the floor of the clinic and tried to help as a Dominican sister and college students attended to the wounded. They were government soldiers and the black-clothed revolutionaries lying on beds side by side. If they died, they were placed side by side outside the clinic. The new friendship of death and new life. On that morning of the 16th of November, a reporter friend took us to the place of the murders. The Jesuits had been dragged from their beds in the middle of the night, made to lie on the ground outside, and then shot point blank in the head. The military had always said that the Jesuits were the intellectual authors of the revolution. So the shooting in the head was evidently to kill their ideas. The soldiers then found the woman who worked at the university, along with her daughter, Selina, and killed them too. It was that 16th of November in 1989 when there was a new realization of what courage comes from ordinary people. That's the story of the 8 Salvadoran martyrs, 6 Jesuit priests, and the 2 university workers. They were ordinary people who paid an extraordinary price. The priests were university scholars, doing research, writing articles, teaching classes during the week. And then, on the weekends, they'd go out to the small, priestless parishes to nourish and to mature the faith of the people there. People who were living in an area of economic misery, political violence. The Jesuits were so deeply committed to the poor, at the academic levels and in practical pastoral compassion. I didn't know all of them well, but I admired the strong stance that their university took. People knew where they stood. Some rich folks deliberately sent their children to the university in order to have them learn Catholic social teaching. Some of the parents were shocked to discover that the implications of those teachings. The 2 women, they were Catholics doing ordinary jobs at the university to keep its vision and its witness going. Not a bad thing for us, too, on this 16th of November, 2014. To reflect on this day of 25 years ago and to do ordinary things and allow God, perhaps, to give the extraordinary effects.